Well, it was exciting at the church conference last Saturday, and we have created momentum, and we move into that with our sermon this morning, Beyond Our Limits. Limits. Everybody here is in a predicament of sorts. Everybody is dealing with a challenge. I just know that's the case. You can't be a human being and not deal with limits or find yourself in a predicament. The famous French mime, Marcel Marceau, would act out, and I'm not going to try to imitate it because he was too skilled, but you know the thing where he's acting like he's boxed in, the mime who's boxed in. That's the existential situation. We find ourselves constricted. We want to be free. We want to do exactly what we want to do at any given moment, but we find constrictions. We have obligations. We have forces acting upon us. We have people telling us, well, you can't do that. What were you thinking of? And so we feel ourselves pulled down. Some people, their predicament is they don't have enough going on in their lives, so they have to create something. Maybe that's why people wager on the Super Bowl. To create a predicament by virtue of the point spread. And now you're nervous, now you're worried. What do they say? It creates the juice. The nervousness, are they going to win or not? You know, as we talk about, as we're moving to a campaign for fundraising, I marvel at the fact, you know, that the world is spending billions of dollars to bet on the Super Bowl. And not just who the winner's going to be, they bet on things like how long is the Star Spangled Banner going to be? Or what's the color of the Gatorade going to be? Or how many times will they use the phrase Deflategate? You know, all these different things. $158 million spent in this country last year to bet on the Super Bowl. Not a problem when it comes to something like that. When you talk about a predicament or a constriction, what could be more universal? What could have been more settled science in the 19th century than the idea that humankind cannot fly? You just can't do it. It's not possible. Such as the power of gravity. You can't do it. We're constricted. We've got to accept that. Don't even try to challenge that. So I think it's fascinating that a United Brethren bishop, and we can claim them because the EUB and the Methodist Church merged in 1968. The merger was right here in Dallas. So we'll claim that preacher who became a bishop in the United Brethren. We'll claim him as a Methodist preacher. He was serving a church in Iowa, and he came home and he gave his boys a toy, a little toy whirly bird that was powered by a rubber band. And you'd wind it up and let it go, and that thing would spin, and it would fly around the room. And he gave it to his two boys, and his boys wore that thing out. They were fascinated by it. He thought he was just giving them a toy to play with. What he didn't realize was all their lives, being good preacher's kids, they had to sit ramrod straight there in the pew for the entire congregation to see and hear the great stories of our faith, in which person after person, Abraham and Sarah, were told, oh, we're too old, we know that, we can't have a child. They're constricted, they're in a predicament, they're limited. That can't happen, and yet it did. Moses, who was the reluctant prophet, I don't have the capability. Lord, don't choose me to lead the people out of Egypt. But he was chosen, and God enabled him, empowered him to be able to be up to the task. David, the little boy, the shepherd boy who stepped forward, his brothers were afraid, but he stepped forward to go and challenge the great giant Goliath. You talk about a limitation. Look across the playing field and see Goliath staring at you. And yet somehow David overcame. Esther, who understood that she must save her people somehow, but after all, she was just a beauty queen. How could she bring that about? How could she use her skills, that which God had given her, and use that in a manner that she could save her people? The same with the Apostle Paul, the same with Mary. The Mediterranean peasant girl who has come to understand, as the angel announced it, that somehow God's plan of salvation would go through her. And as she held that into her heart, finally she realized that her soul, she announced her soul would magnify the Lord. She was up to the task and overcame her limitations. With that in mind, hear this great story out of the Gospel of John, this story of overcoming limitations. I invite you to join along with me in your bulletins. When he looked up and saw a large crowd coming toward him, Jesus said to Philip, "Where are we to buy bread for these people to eat?" He said this to test him, for he himself knew what he was going to do. And Philip answered him, 6 months' wages would not buy enough bread for each of them to get a little. And one of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, "Well, there is a boy who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, but what are they among so many people?" And Jesus said, "Make the people sit down." Now there was a great deal of grass in the place, so they sat down, about 5,000 in all. Then Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed them to those who were seated. So also the fish, as much as they wanted. When they were satisfied, he told his disciples, "Gather up the fragments left over so that nothing may be lost." So they gathered them up, and from the fragments of the 5 barley loaves left by those who had eaten, they filled 12 baskets. When the people saw the sign that they had done, they began to say, "This is indeed the prophet who is to come into the world." May the Lord bless the reading of this word. Jesus was teaching throughout the countryside. He got on the boat. He left the crowd behind, but they would not be left behind. They followed him with their eyes and walked along the shore. So they were there waiting to greet him when he arrived again in the boat. They demanded more teaching, more preaching, and he gave it to them. But even as they were receptive and hungry for the word, Jesus realized that they were also hungry, just hungry, for bread, for food, and he took pity upon them. So he turned to Philip and said, "Well, you know, where are we going to go buy some food for these people?" And Philip, who must have been pretty good with numbers, did an estimate and said, "Lord, that would cost six months' wages, 200 denarii. There's no way we could afford that." He just did a practical analysis. Philip wasn't a bad guy. He was just being responsible. He was just being practical. Andrew decided to kind of do an inventory of the available resources, walked up to a little boy whose mother had obviously packed a lunch for him, said, "Well, we've got 5 loaves and 2 fish here. Not that that's going to do any good." And then Jesus proceeded to multiply them, miraculously to multiply them, to astound everybody around him and serve the crowd. 5,000 people, that's a lot. We know that when we serve communion on Christmas Eve and the people just keep coming and coming and coming as you're serving and you're replacing and they're bringing out more wafers and more juice, you're trying to serve them frantically. And that's what went on. Jesus multiplied and he met their need. He has the ability to overcome limits. Such is the power of God incarnate that we have in Christ. Well, how do we use that power this morning? Well, like I said, I believe that you have a predicament. What is your predicament? Maybe it has to do with family. Maybe you're taking care of an elderly parent. Maybe it has to do with an adult child. Maybe you're having difficulty in your marriage. Maybe you're estranged from a sibling and you're trying to work it out, but you just don't know how to proceed. Perhaps you're having issues at work or you've got health issues. You're tired or you're afraid of an exam that's coming up. Maybe you don't have enough money. Maybe you're wondering about your money. Maybe you're retired and you're wondering, is the money going to last, given that we tend to live longer nowadays? Maybe you just don't have a sense of purpose and you have a sense of emptiness inside, and that's your predicament that you're having to come to grips with. Well, the first thing to do is do an analysis of what's going on with you. And that sounds easy, but it's not always, is it? We're myopic when it comes to us. We can assess other people, but when it comes to us, we have a blind spot by definition. Try to be honest. Give an honest inventory of what's going on with you. You know, those preacher kids who were trying to figure out how that little toy flew, they grew up to be teenagers and then young men, and you know what they did? They hadn't forgotten that limit of overcoming that limit, so they started a bicycle shop, and they used the engineering from bicycles and bicycle wheels and spokes and all these different forces, and they began to create a wind tunnel, and they started building wings and propellers, and they exposed them to the wind tunnel coming through, and they made copious notes. What went on? What worked? What didn't work? How could they overcome the wind and the airflow? They began to analyze and make hypotheses and try to figure it out. Sometimes we need an adjustment. I know, you know, there was a time when you knew that in the morning rush hour and evening rush hour that Central will be crowded. Now it's crowded all the time. I just assume Central will be bumper to bumper. So what do? I made adjustments. I either try to go home a little early or I wait till after 6:30 to go home because I just don't want to deal with that traffic. That was an easy adjustment. Maybe you're having difficulty with a friend. Maybe you find yourself, you come home, you've spent time with the person who's active in your life, and you just don't feel good, and your spouse or somebody around you says, why are you always in such a bad mood? And maybe you finally have figured out the adjustment you need to make is to give up that friendship. And it sounds harsh, but sometimes we have to give things away in order so that we can move forward. It's always appropriate to petition God. Sometimes we're self-conscious about that. We say, well, you know, I want to pray for others, but I don't know. It may not be right to pray for myself. It's always appropriate to petition for your own needs. God loves you as well. You have a covenant with yourself. And so I would simply suggest pray for a specific outcome. Be specific when you pray to God and ask for deliverance in some matter. Make the adjustment and then multiply. Maybe you need to multiply your efforts. Maybe you're not trying hard enough. Maybe you've got an attitudinal issue and you just need to overcome. How can you not hear that marvelous anthem marching to Zion and leave this place and not multiply your efforts? There's a power in multiplication that's much more exponential and powerful than simple addition. I love that question that you ask, you know, it's kind of a riddle. Which would you rather have, $1 million or be given a penny on the first day of a month and double that penny every day for a month for 31 days? Well, invariably people say, well, give me that $1 million, you know. But if you do the math, you take that first penny, the second day you get 2 cents, third day you get 4 cents, the fourth day you get 8 cents. Do the math, you end up with $5.3 million because that's the power of multiplication. That's the power that we have access, the power when Jesus multiplied the fish and the loaves. Human will is a powerful force. If we'll will something and align our will with God's will, who can stop us if we persist? And yes, occasionally we realize, you know, it's not going to change. And so the task of faith is to accept. We just have to accept and move forward and not be held hostage. So we figure it out, we choose and we act, and that's how we overcome our limits and get out of our predicament. Another way to experience power as an individual is to align yourself with an organization, a group of people, a collective that gives you power and renews you and pulls you along. And I like to think of this church as such an organization. The people of God known as Highland Park United Methodist Church. You know, we just celebrated 100 years of mission and ministry. And it's so inspiring to think of our forebears who time and time again were given limits, the Great Depression. Oh, we can't even make our building payment. Preacher, let's hold off on those apportionments. Let's not pay for that missional giving. Let's take care of ourselves first. And Marshall Steele said, absolutely not, not going to happen. That's the sort of spirit, the attitude that this people of God has, that we will reach out and be there for other people. I guess the temptation, the constriction, would be after 100 years, we could say, well, we kind of did it. Let's do the picture book, which we did a great job of that, and let's rest on our laurels and celebrate who we are and put out the velvet ropes, and we'll kind of become a wonderful museum, an archives, if you will. People can come and learn about the great things that were done for the first 100 years. But that's not the nature of this congregation. It's certainly not the nature of Paul Rasmussen, who understood his role, what he set apart to create a vision, but it's simply one preacher's vision until the church embraces it the way we did at the church conference. And the church conference said, yes, This is who we want to be, and this is what we're going to do. We will move beyond our limits. So in the next three Sundays, including this Sunday, let me talk about some of the limits that we're dealing with. One of the most mundane but a practical reality that you have contended with this morning is parking or lack thereof. You know, we actually own up to ourselves 17 spaces. The rest belong to SMU and we have an agreement with them. 17 spaces. One of the ways that we're going to move beyond those limits is we'll enter into an agreement with SMU. They're building another garage on Hillcrest. $15 million is what it's going to cost. We're going to contribute $3 million to that, and we'll have access to some 500 new spaces to overcome our parking limitations. In addition, we know that we've got space issues right here at 3300 Mockingbird. Every Sunday morning, I'm working on my sermon and I hear laughter and talking right outside my office, and I open the door and there's a ring of kids sitting on the floor. And I know what's going on. Susan knows what's going on. It's our confirmation class. Do you know we have the largest confirmation class in the United Methodist Church nationally? The largest confirmation class. We have over 300 kiddos in our confirmation class every year. We just don't have any place to put them, that's all. So we divide them up into groups and they sit on the floor all around the church building. We're held to a ratio of caretakers to infants in our nursery. And time again, sadly, we find ourselves turning young parents away. What a welcome that is. How's that for the good news? Well, we're glad you made it, but hey, we can't watch your kiddo. Maybe you can keep them in the pew this Sunday morning. Some of them stay, some of them go to the pew, others do not. Some of them never come back because of our inability to care for their children. Why? Because of space constrictions. We need more space for our education, for our children's classes as well. We're limited here, so what are we going to do? We're going to move beyond those limits, and we're going to renovate the building over across on Hillcrest. The building that has been known as the Biggers Building will become a renovated family activity center. We will triple the space there. We'll create all sorts of space for our youth. We'll be able to move them over there, and then we'll recreate and redesign and reconfigure the space here and be able to amply provide for our kiddos here. Over there at the new building, let me say a word about lead gifts, because as we move into this campaign, we've already been out talking to members, stakeholders, about making substantial gifts. I've been a party to those conversations. I've called on some of you. And let me say that, you know, some people say, oh, finance campaign, that must be a drag. I don't know what it is it says about me, but I've always found finance campaigns to be a very moving experience. You know why? Maybe it's because it's such a bottom line expression of people's commitment and their faith. After all, money is the language of value. It's a secular language of value. And when we vote with our giving and our dollars, it really says something to me. So have we talked to some of you and you've said, you know, we want to make a substantial gift? I find that to be a powerful witness. Lead gifts, everyone's different. None is the same. Some people don't want any recognition at all. Others don't mind if their name is used. Sometimes it's a naming opportunity. Everyone is different and will be honored accordingly. But I find it to be a very powerful witness. One of the witnesses that was announced this morning is that Paul made a visit to President George and Laura Bush at their home, and they're donating $500,000 for the President George and Laura Bush Confirmation Center over at the new building, $500,000. So that there's power in that. We'll be announcing other gifts as they come, as we make arrangements with the donors. In addition, we're devoting the entire first floor to special people with special needs who have to contend with all sorts of limitations. Many times because churches have nothing for them, that's not a vilification thing, they just don't have the resources. Other times because they literally don't have access, their building is not designed in such a way that they have access. But we're going to provide that on the first floor. We're going to provide a sensory area. that they will be challenged in a sensory manner, and then to give you a sense of the impact that this new facility for this ongoing ministry can have, we want to show you this video vignette at this time from the Urschel family.
Our son Chance was born in 1995. He lived a wonderful 20 years. He died on leap year 2016, February 29th.
Chance in a nutshell was everything I ever want to be. He was so tough. One of my favorite memories of Chance is his smile, because it just makes everybody in the room, you either start laughing or you just instantly be happy.
You know, he had quite a few girlfriends. You know, he did. And I mean, he's the perfect boyfriend. Somebody that smiles, that loves you unconditionally, always never says a word.
Chance had a condition called holoprosencephaly, which is easiest to liken it to cerebral palsy.
It's a brain malformation. He went through some tremendous physical challenges and I'm sure mental challenges. He was in a wheelchair pretty much 24/7, except when we were doing physical therapy with him. Yet, he was able to accomplish so much in his lifetime. We first got involved with special needs ministry back in 1995, 1996, when Chance was first born.
It's just been such an amazing place for Chance to be, and such a cool place. He just loved it. It had such a big impact on him and on us, and like on everybody that ever came in contact with him there. It really just changes you as a person.
Having a child with special needs, you are always working to find a place where they are welcome and they're nurtured. And we learned so much from him, not only what he could give, but that he wanted to give. We helped him to bake pies and give pies away. We helped him to greet people at the church.
So I think the more that we can help the congregation of the church understand the beauty and the benefit of this population and the resources that it provides for the church. Not the church providing resources for it, like we're building in this building, but the special needs group will actually give back tremendous amount of value and resources and inspire spiritually and just in the day-to-day lives of all of the people, the congregation, they're lucky enough to interact with them.
I think he would be very proud of what we're doing. And I love the title of the campaign, because it does go beyond. It goes beyond providing just a room and a space for these special children and their families. It's welcoming. It's acknowledging that these special people have great value.
It's something that allows people like my brother to have their life changed by the church and have other people have their life changed. Because I couldn't have imagined having Chance's brother without having the church. And for some of these families, they might have not experienced that yet. Once they build this, it's gonna not only change the kid's life, but the parent's life, and then everybody who works there.
This was Chance's church. This church cared enough to create a place for him, to minister to him. And now we continue to move beyond those limits to extend his spirit. And in honor of Chance and his love of pies, Brian, if we could show this slide here, that room, that space there has been made possible by a donation, a lead gift from the Urschel family. And that space will be known as Chance's Pie Palace. As we continue to embody his spirit and his energy. We have time, so let me show you a couple of other slides. We have a slide of the youth of the forum, the worship forum that will be in the new building. You see there, as we'll have a venue for young preachers to go and hone their homiletical skills. Also, our youth will be able to worship there as well. And then I think we've got a gymnasium that I think Paul is very fond of, with his love of basketball. And you'll notice it's got wooden floors. That's no sport carpet. That's the real thing there. That's authentic wood. And we'll continue in the spirit of offering church athletics and exercise there. And then, Brian, I think there's one more slide. Is it a lounge or a youth activity area there? You know, so much of the challenge of youth ministry is simply giving youth something to do, organized in a way that they feel free, that they can enjoy, and we plan on being that. We're kind of the go-to place for Park City's youth and beyond, and we want that to continue, especially with the new facility. We know that there are limits that would seek to constrain us, but we can't let that happen. If you were there last Saturday, you know if you add up all of the vision that we've adopted and we have embraced, the cost of it is $65 million. That's a lot of money. The good news is we've already raised $35 million of it. We've already raised $35 million of it as we move into the public phase of the campaign. We're in discussions with other folks for lead gifts. So it's a very exciting time. Please know that we've done an all-church mail-out. If you've not already received it, you're going to be receiving a packet. We'll have information about the campaign. You can go to the website and you can see the presentation that Paul made at the church conference, and then it will have a pledge card. And I would simply ask you to do these three things. Number one, give prayerful consideration to what above and beyond for second mile giving that you and your family would be able to contribute. People ask, well, what are the rules? You know, are you supposed to give it in a lump sum? Are you supposed to give it over a period of 1 or 2 years? The mantra response to that is the donor is always right. I would tell you we've already received one gift that was a $1 million check that was paid in a lump sum. Another, we had a $1 million pledge pledged over a period of 10 years to be paid $100,000 per year. There's no right answer to that question. The only right answer, and obviously we're not all going to give at the same level, but the only correct answer is that we all give something together. Give something together. You know, I haven't told you the end of the story of those two preacher kids. I think you kind of know what the end of the story is. But Wilbur and Orville Wright took their ideas and went out to a very windy place, Kitty Hawk or Kill Devil Hills, North Carolina, right there on the beach. And they took those ideas and the wings and the propellers, and they began to take their gliders and try to get them to fly. And 1903 was the first manned flight. Not created by a team of scientists, but two preacher's kids who had always been taught from the scriptures that you cannot be kept down by that which would seem to limit you, but you must find a way, prayerfully find a way to overcome. Their father, Bishop Milton Wright, told them, don't you ever fly one of those newfangled contraptions together, because I wouldn't want a tragedy and I wouldn't want to lose both my sons to one accident. So they never flew together. And of course, Dad always refused to get into one of those newfangled things. Reminds me of the caterpillar that looked up and saw a butterfly and said, you'll never catch me in one of those darn things. But actually, in 1910, after they'd been flying for quite a while, they invited their dad one more time. And you know what he said? The bishop said, okay, I'll go. So they got their dad down, and he got up. They had it. By this time, you had seats on these things, not enclosed. They were still open air, but they got their dad. He was 82 years old, the old distinguished bishop. They strapped him in, and then they took off, and he didn't say a word. It was a six-minute flight. It went 300 feet in the air. He didn't say a word for a while, but when they were at the apex of their flight, of their arc, he turned to his son, and he said three words, higher, Orville. Higher. When we use our God-given talents and we align our will with God, we can overcome our limits, that which would restrict us, and we can find ourselves moving higher, Orville, higher, together.